Hey, everybody, welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris, longtime real estate investor, and this is the show where we focus on buy and hold real estate for the purposes of creating passive income and creating legacy wealth for you and your family. I'm really excited about today's show. It's a topic we haven't really covered here on the broadcast before. You know, how do you invest when you're an older person, when you're maybe nearing the age of retirement or even just beyond, and you're thinking, wait a second, I haven't built any legacy wealth for my family. I've been kind of doing the 9-to-5 job. I maybe have some money in my savings, but I really haven't started building passive income. You know what? It's never too old to start. And I'm excited about my guest today. My guest is Bill Manicero. He is the host of the Top Dog Old Dogs REI Network, which is a website, blog, newsletter, new weekly podcast for people 50 years and older who are using real estate investing as a means to fund their retirement and to create a legacy for their children and grandchildren. At 60 years of age, he came off the mission field with very little retirement funds and the dilemma of having to go back to work or finding another way of making money. So folks, Bill can relate to your situation if you're facing that same thing. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, great to be here. I'm real excited to be able to hang out with you this morning, Clayton.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Bill. I really appreciate it. First, before we go kind of into your story a little bit, tell us about the Old Dog REI Network, and you're the host of that show.
Yeah, well, basically, it was something that developed out of, as you mentioned, I was in Haiti. I was in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, as a missionary for the last 12 years. During that time, you know, we were getting sort of the end of our season, just getting up there in the years, and it's a kind of country that can take a lot out of you, you know, both physically, emotionally, and everything else. And so we were getting ready to come back to the States, and I was realizing, gee, you know, I'm basically, you know, retirement age or close to retirement age, and I really don't have any kind of formal retirement. You know, we basically lived on faith for most of our lives there. And I'd been in business before and started businesses. I had, you know, a background like that. So I started looking at what were the options and, looking at, well, if all else fails, I'll just put on the blue vest and hand out shopping carts at Walmart, but not my first preference. Okay. And to anyone listening, nothing wrong with that. I think it's wonderful, but I really was looking for something that would allow me the freedom to be able to enjoy my retirement years and my kids and grandkids, and but at the same time, you know, be able to generate income for us in our retirement years, as well as build a legacy that I can hand down to my kids. So, I started looking at different things. I looked at online businesses. I even started while I was in Haiti a little these drop ship type things where you buy on Amazon and sell on eBay, and you know, did that for a while, and it was, you know, generating some great income, and it was kind of ramping up. I'm just doing this in my spare time, which I didn't have a lot of when I was over there, but I was having fun with it. And then all of a sudden, boom, I got kicked off of eBay because it was one of these things where you have to count on your supplier to, you know, to be there for whatever products you're selling. And if they don't, then you have to go to the person that bought the product and say, hey, look, we're out of it. I have to give you a refund. And as nice as I tried to be, you know, I still got a couple of bad reviews. And all it takes is like 3 reviews and boom, you're off of eBay. So there went my online business.
And, wow.
And yeah, it was just like instant. And I'm kind of going, well, let's see, you know, what else could I start? And I got this unexpected inheritance check in the mail, and I was already fairly invested in the stock market, and I didn't feel comfortable putting those funds in there. So I was just looking to diversify, you know, my investment portfolio. And, I said, why not real estate? So I started doing my homework. First thing I read was, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I got in the frame of mind to understand, you know, how I was going to invest. And then I had to figure out where, and started doing research on emerging markets, and eventually hopped on a plane for 5 days, flew into Atlanta and Memphis, bought 3 different properties, rental properties, and hopped back on a plane to Port-au-Prince. And I wasn't really thinking of doing this as some sort of a potential retirement thing. I just thought of it as another investment. So, but you know, the next month I immediately started receiving rent checks and I'm going, well, this is pretty sweet. You know, I'm not really having to do anything. I've got property managers running the properties. This is pretty neat. I wonder if I could ramp this up. And so I really started researching. I ended up writing a little business plan for myself and with a pretty grandiose plan here to acquire 1,000 units by 2020. So 1,000 units in 6 years. And the idea was, one, we really didn't need 1,000 units, the income from that. But we also have this mission in Haiti that still exists today. And we really are looking for a way to be able to perpetuate that, keep that growing, and really see the majority of that going to that effort. So that's what happened. And as I'm doing this and doing my investing, a lot of my fellow old dog friends are asking me, well, how's it going? What are you doing? What are you buying? And I'm sharing it with them and writing emails to people. And it was getting kind of busy. So I started blogging, making it a little easier so I could just kind of document my journey there. And the blog turned into a podcast. And so now we have folks that are 50 plus that are listening. Some are approaching retirement. Some are already in retirement that, you know, are concerned about the retirement years and whether or not they'll be able to enjoy them the way that they had always dreamed or planned.
Well, that's great. An amazing story. And I love you draw out sort of a business plan for yourself. Take me through some of the mechanics of that. What did that business plan look like?
Well, for me, it always makes more sense to start, you know, at the end. What do you want your retirement to look like at a certain point?
And
And really, I was looking for extremely passive type of income. And in order to do that, you know, I have to scale up to a certain size. And I also looked at the funds that would be needed not only for us. You know, I've still got I've got 7 kids, and I have a number of them that are still unmarried. And I'm anticipating weddings and, you know, maybe helping them with, you know, acquiring their first home. And as we're getting older, you know, medical expenses, things like that, trying to figure what will be the needs. And then also looking at the mission and what kind of income do we have to generate to keep things going there and to build things to where we'd like them to be in Haiti. So in that process, I looked at, this is pretty much what we're going to have to generate. Now, how am I going to do that? And that's where I started to look at, you know, I had a few properties. I had 2 single family and a duplex to sort of plan. Yes, I knew what I was generating, how much per door I was generating. And then I figured, well, to really do this the way that we want to do it, it's going to take about, I would say, 1,000 doors. And I'm thinking, you know, gosh, I can't picture buying 1,000 homes. And so I started revising in my thinking and saying, well, you know, it's going to have to be multifamily. That's really the only way I'm going to be able to do this. So that's where I started looking at it. And I started in 2014. And my plan is fairly simple. It's doubling the number of units I have each year. Now, as it gets near the end of the period, of course, you know, we're talking, you know, you're having, 200-300 units at a time, you're having to double and so forth. But up to that point, it's just a matter, again, of doubling. Right in this year we're in right now, I am looking for 100 plus units in 2017. And next year I will you'll be looking somewhere in the 200s, 200 plus units. And then it'll, you know, again, it keeps increasing exponentially. So that's really the basis of the, you know, the goal that I set. And then with that, I have to look at, well, what kind of effort, what do I have to do on a daily basis in order to generate that goal or to achieve that goal for the year? And, you know, it goes from everything from calling brokers to direct mail to submitting offers, you know, and setting goals for each day, each week, each month, each year, based on what that end goal is for that year.
That's great. Okay, so let's talk about, first of all, I want to get into the snowball effect of your properties, how you're able to continue to roll and roll and roll them, because that's important for people to understand. And I want to talk about the retirement piece of this and the age piece of this. But first, I want to talk about what types of properties you're buying now. Where and what part of the country are you buying? Or did you say you're buying in Haiti?
No. Okay. There's one place I didn't feel comfortable buying in Haiti. Yeah, okay. It's a little volatile over there. So yeah, that wasn't, although I think there's probably opportunity. It's just that as an American citizen, I'm allowed to own property, but, as far as investment wise, I didn't feel comfortable with it. So,
So
what I really have been looking at is what I call, emerging markets in the U.S. And areas, for example, the real estate market in the U.S. is very cyclical, as everyone knows. It has its ups and downs and ups and downs. There's sort of a national view of that. But I believe really most economic changes happen on the regional, in the regional basis. So what I try to do is look at areas that are exhibiting early growth in population, in jobs, low unemployment figures, businesses moving to that area, all the right factors that demonstrate that this area is going to really, take off. And if you look at a sort of a bell curve, I live in Southern California, and I believe we're sort of at the top of that curve right now. It's really hard to picture properties getting any higher in price. But there are other areas of the country where you're sort of at the bottom of that bell curve. And those are the areas that I'm looking at that have that potential to really appreciate. Now I would make this really clear. I make it really clear that our focus is all cash flow. It's all about cash flow. I believe the equity part of it is sort of the icing on the cake. But at the same time, in an emerging market, that's one of the advantages you get, is that you have rapid growth, which allows, and with my particular situation, to be able to turn properties over quicker and to generate a significant income, not only in the cash flow that you have, but in the equity play. And that equity, that additional equity that you've accumulated in that property, allows you to be able to buy a larger property in the next stage and so forth.
Today's episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Oh yeah. Are you in need of great talent for your business, but you're short on time to find that person? Well, I know that we go through that here at Morris Invest. You don't have to get lost in a huge stack of resumes to find your perfect hire. You just need the right tools, smarter tools, and that's what ZipRecruiter does. So with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you don't have to go through all 100 job boards. You can do it with one click. I love that. You can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work. So it's actively notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting. So they're going to get a notification. So you'll receive the best possible matches. Then that's why ZipRecruiter is different, because unlike other hiring sites that are out there, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on the right candidates finding you. It goes out and finds them. I love it. So it's no wonder that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. That's been our experience here at Morris Invest as we expand. So ZipRecruiter, it's the smartest way to hire. I stand by it. We use it. We love it. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And get this, my listeners to this podcast, you can go and post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. For free. All you have to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/investing. ZipRecruiter.com/investing. So one more time, get it for free. Try it out. Post your jobs on there. You have nothing to lose because it's free if you use this URL, ZipRecruiter.com/investing. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. So take me through that process. And maybe if some of your first few, you were starting from scratch here. You had to pick up Rich Dad, Poor Dad. At what age were you when you picked that book up?
I was like probably 59 or something like that. Yeah, it was late. Wow. Definitely. I had no real estate experience except in, buying a home when I lived in the States. Right. And so, I have friends that were investors and very active investors, but I really didn't have the experience. So for me, it was totally from scratch. I had to, read all the books on real estate investing and everything related. I didn't jump right into knowing what I was doing. Like I said, I was doing this eBay thing. Then I started saying, well, maybe I can flip, And so I bought this course and, I got all the materials for flipping and, I'm living in Haiti. I'm thinking I'm going to flip in the U.S. How am I going to do that? And it just didn't pan out. And then I thought, well, wholesaling. I know these guys that are wholesaling and they don't even have to be there. They just get on the phone and that wasn't clicking for me. So, I had sort of that shiny object syndrome, where I was deeds and trusts, liens, I'm just all over the board. And I just sat back. I said, look, buy and hold is probably about the best solid investment you can make in real estate. I'm just going to stick with the old traditional way. And actually my first three properties were turnkey properties even because I didn't really have time to, do any kind of upgrades or renovation. I had to buy something that was just ready to go. And that's how I started right out of the chute. But it took me a little bit in that. And the problem with buying the turnkey is that generally you're either buying at market or above market rate. You're paying for the renovations and all the things that had to be done in advance on that property. So I didn't have sort of the equity part of it that I thought I would have. Now, fortunately, a year later, in year two, I only bought one property. I just bought a duplex. And so I was behind the scale on that because what I should have done is I had three doors. I should have bought six doors. I only bought two doors. So I was four doors short on my goal. And I bought a duplex, but the next year I was going to make up for the difference. And the following year, which is last year, I bought a 22 unit in Indianapolis. And in order to do that, I was able to do a cash out refi. Now, the first three properties I bought cash, so I had absolutely no mortgage to deal with on those. And it was great, especially getting the income just without having mortgage taken out of it.
Right. So you had that cash in your arsenal, so to speak, which I imagine is what a lot of folks who, are over 50, they probably do. They have that money sitting there and they just don't know what to do with it.
Oh yeah. And, I mean, a lot of folks, I'm sure, a lot of people that I deal with every day, I talk to a lot of 50 plusers that are investing. And usually one of the first things they do is get a line of credit on their equity and you use that for their investments. Or they've got a nest egg that they can tap into, that may be part of their IRA or a self-directed account of some type or another. But I had, equity in these, first three properties. The fourth property I bought, I actually financed it, the duplex. The reason being is that, I had been, I didn't have any credit established because I've been debt free for like 20, 25 years. And so I didn't have any credit cards. I hadn't bought a car financed a car or anything. So I had to also start from scratch on my credit because I knew that with this plan, it's going to require having a strong credit rating. Well, I didn't really have any kind of credit rating because I don't think I was even on the books, and I hated it. This was like the toughest thing in the world for me. I just started signing up for credit cards. I financed a car when I moved back to the States, and I was just biting my lip the whole time going, I don't want to go into debt. But, the idea was that I was going to do this so that I can create what's called good debt, or Robert Kiyosaki calls good debt, which is, the mortgages and so forth that you can leverage in your cash flow and wealth building. So I had to do that, but I did a cash out refi on the first three properties that I purchased in order to get the down payment to buy the 22 unit in Indianapolis.
What did the numbers look like on the cash out refis? Did you do them simultaneously as one sort of portfolio cash out, or did you do it as an individual? And how did you – so take me through some of the mechanics of that. Did you have it in an LLC or in your own name? Did you cash out all of them simultaneously or one at a time? And what was your loan-to-value ratio from the bank when you did the cash out?
Well, there's a lot of questions there. Okay, I'll try.
I'm going to sit back, Bill, and have some coffee. So go ahead.
Yeah, really? Okay, so basically what I did is I wanted a package deal because I knew I'll tell you what I found a it was an older building. It was 22 units in Indianapolis. Indianapolis wasn't quite what I would call an emerging market, but it was a steady growing market. And that also, you know, I saw the numbers, people are moving in there, jobs are good, unemployment is low. You know, it had a lot of all the right factors. It wasn't booming though, like places like Atlanta or Memphis were, but it definitely had the earmarks of a good solid place to invest. So I found a property on LoopNet, believe it or not. And most people usually don't look on LoopNet for multifamilies because, you know, whatever's there is usually something somebody can't sell. But I found this property. It was, you know, and again, I'm very naive. I did a lot of mistakes, believe me. And that's one thing that I document on my website is I give them the good, the bad, and the ugly. And sometimes there's a lot of ugly in there, just the mistakes that I've made. But one of the things that I did is going to do is it's an older building built in 1925. It is 22 units, 17 of which are studio or efficiencies, and then five which are one bedroom. So, you know, the mix is something I would never go after today. But my thought was I got to get in here and get that experience with this property, you know, to say, hey, I've bought a multifamily and I did well with it. And so, I needed, not only money for a down payment, but I also needed money for capital improvement. You know, one of the things that this building has, I'd never even heard of because I lived in California and then I lived in Haiti, you know, so I wasn't really familiar with what a boiler was. And, and it had a boiler that heated this whole place. And, it was old, it worked, but you know, I saw that one, it was going to be an issue that it was either going to have to be replaced at some point. And that's a huge expense to replace.
Yeah, boilers are expensive, but they can last for like 50 years if you take care of them. That's the beauty. They're like iron tanks, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and the one part of my thinking also was that, you know, I bought this place. Okay, it was initially listed for 400. By the time I got the courage, you know, I'd work in the numbers for months. I finally come to make an offer on it and it's already under contract. And I go, oh man, you know, this is a drag. And so it was offered for around $400,000 for the property, which is, I mean, you can't buy a house in where I live for $400,000. And so it seemed really inexpensive, but nonetheless, for me, it was a lot. I was real discouraged because I took so long to move on it. I happened to tell the broker in the process, though. I said, look, if this for some reason doesn't go through, put me on the top of the list of next potential buyers. Okay. And I will just, boom, I'll give you a deposit. And, sure enough, like 2 months, 3 months later, I get a call from the broker and he is, the folks couldn't get the financing together. So I was real excited about that. You know, came in, put a deposit down, I negotiated down the price to $370,000. After inspection, I dug deeper. We found some other things, knocked the price down to $350,000. And so everything worked out really, really great. It was appraised for the financing at $400,000. So I walked into it already having $50,000 in equity just starting out of the chute. But, you know, my whole focus was this is a value add deal. And so I had to radically cut expenses and boost income. And the rents were already under market. So I had some great opportunity there. But the expenses were, you know, that was the tough part. And that was where I looked at the boiler and I said, the boiler's got to go. What we're going to do is the tenants pay electric. So we're going to do sideboard electric heating in each unit.
Those are the best.
Yeah. And they're able to control their heat better and so forth. You know, yeah, they have to pay for it, but it's an immediate expense off of the owner. And so I did things like that. I rewired the place for 220. They had gas stoves. I replaced them all with electric stoves because again, landlord pays gas and, cut the expenses pretty radically. We increased the rent significantly, did major upgrades in all the common areas as well as each unit. And, we were able to increase the rents, in some cases up to 16%. And, so we increased the income, reduced the expenses. And currently, if you just look at the numbers and the area cap rate, the property is valued at anywhere between $550,000 and $600,000. So we've, within a year's period, of almost doubled the price of this property. And so now I'm looking at this property as a means to be able to cash out refi and be able to use some of those funds to leverage to buy the 100 plus units.
That's great. That's amazing. So now how many doors are you currently at? You're trying to get to 1,000. Where do you currently sit?
Well, I'm at 28 right now. I should be at 36. So I've been a little below my mark for the first couple of years. But that's normally I would be buying, if I was at 36, I'd buy 72. But that's why I'm going for 100 is I want to go over the goal. And plus there's some real advantages at 100 plus too, is like I can have on-site staff, as far as property manager on site full time and a maintenance person, and being able to have that under control is really critical. And I guess you could do it in the 70s, but at 100 plus, I think you got a little buffer in there, so it allows you to have that that staff control on it, which I think would be a lot better to manage.
Yeah, well, I'd love to hear too, with a little bit of time we have left. You know, I guess maybe the mindset of being over 50, you talk to so many 50 plusers who are thinking to themselves, I just can't get started. I've missed my time. And I focus on cash flow, right? I focus on, the three stages of real estate investing: buy, own, and cash flow. And so as you get older, you kind of want to try to get to that cash flow stage more quickly. Now, for me, I'm trying to, a little bit younger, I'm trying to build up that net worth, and then I'll worry about the cash flow later, meaning, if I have to acquire properties where I don't have a lot of immediate cash flow after I pay them off or pay them down, et cetera, then a few years from now, I'll have that cash flow. But I imagine you're zeroing in kind of right on that cash flow based on the age. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we have a shorter time frame than a younger person like yourself would have. And I talk to folks all age ranges listen to our podcast, and some guys in their 20s, and they're just starting out, and you can put together a 20-year plan, and granted, I think people are living longer, and I wouldn't be surprised if 10 years from now, there's people that are, a lot more people that are octogenarians, that are really up there. But at the same time, I think we want to be young enough to also enjoy our retirement years too, And so that's why I have a 6-year plan for myself. There are others that, maybe they only need another $500 or $1,000 a month, just to bring them to that comfort level that they need to be. Maybe they have a pension or combined with Social Security that they're, just looking for a little bit of extra. Some are looking for significantly more, and maybe they want to make a wealth play out of it, and also create that legacy for their children. And I know that, I definitely want to create something that I can hand down to my children as well. So that's, we don't have the time frame. And that's why I'm sort of looking at emerging markets, because you can get a faster return. You can use the equity to leverage you to the next step, to the next step. And it is a little faster. But cash flow is right out of the chute the number one concern that most of the folks that I speak with.
Right. Well, what do you think are things holding people back from taking action? Or what have you experienced that's the reason they've waited so long?
there are a lot of different reasons. There are some folks that have been retired for a while that went through, you know, 2008, 2009, may have even lost their entire pension, or a big chunk of their savings. So they're extremely skeptical because you've got, you know, this nest egg that you're holding on to. And, you know, one of the big concerns right now, is it going to last me the full time? You know, is this going to last me the duration? And that's a big concern. So they don't want to make any bad investments. They would rather, you know, pull 3% a year and know that, you know, it's insured and there's not going to be any risk involved, as opposed to, you know, taking that money and leveraging it in something as solid, I believe, as real estate. There are no guarantees with real estate. Don't get me wrong, but it is, to me, I think, the most solid place to invest your money, because you really do have something tangible at the end of it. And there's always going to be that property that you're going to have that's going to have value. And it may take a while to get up to the value that you would like it to be, but it's always got value.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's the big thing, is that, okay, I've only got so much money. I don't want to play with it. I don't want to gamble. And so for them, it's that decision. Is this solid, secure? Is this the kind of thing that I really can feel comfortable with, you know, and sleep well at night knowing that I'm doing this? And so that's probably the first concern, you know, because and one of the reasons why people even get involved with real estate investing is because they're concerned if that nest egg is going to last them the entire duration or not of their retirement years.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so to have those assets, you know, that's why the stock market has always been mysterious to me, but the assets in real estate, they can never go down to $0 in value, right? So you're buying a, you know, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 house. Maybe you see a little bit of property value swing a little bit here and there if you're buying them in those emerging markets, those safe markets where you're going to be consistently cash flowing. You know, we talk about building legacy wealth and being able to hand those properties down to your children. As we wrap things up here, Bill, how do you prepare those folks for the handoff process?
Well, that's huge. And, you know, a lot of folks that, let's say, for example, come into new wealth, you know, that's one of those areas where you wonder, you know, how many generations are, you know, is this going to survive? And, you know, you look at, you know, for example, Donald Trump and his family, and he raised his kids to take over his business. I mean, they all, you know, are integrated part of it and now running it. But, you know, I didn't have that opportunity because I started pretty late in life. And so, you know, I have a couple of my kids that are interested, and I'm sharing everything I can. You know, I have a 17-year-old son who, you know, is read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He gets it. He is getting ready to go to college. He wants to buy a fourplex, live in one of the other units, and rent out the other three. I mean, he's ramped up. He's getting ready to go. And you know, and that'd be great, because I would like them to be able to understand the business if I'm going to hand it off to them. And you know, because this really, when you're talking this many units, it really is a business, and you have to understand, you know, that you have to manage it like a business. And so, you know, he's taking business classes. He really wants to be able to do that. I've got other kids that are kind of standing back to kind of see what he does, to see if, you know, that's something they might want. But, you know, I would love to be able to bring them in to be able to do this when I'm too old to really manage it anymore. And then just let them grow it and hopefully, you know, do well with it and pass it on to their children and keep going.
Well, that is the dream. And so we've started even at 7 and 5 years old with our, well, we've got three, but one of them's 10 months, 11 months old. So, but trying to put down those pieces. We've done a couple of podcast episodes here in the past about how to teach your children about passive income and building net assets and how that all works. So it's incredibly important at any age to get started in real estate investing. Well, Bill, what's next for you? I know you're well on your way to hitting that 1,000 number. What is next for you?
Well, you know, I think after I reach that goal, I'm not going to be looking at acquiring anymore at that point. You know, maybe there might be, you know, one that makes sense to sell, and then at that point maybe replace it with something else. But you know, my goal is to really get it up to that area, be able to hire people that will manage the properties, people that are, you know, wrapped up in monitoring and making sure that, you know, that everything is going well, maintaining the properties, you know, doing all the right stuff to keep this going. And, you know, my hope is, you know, at that point to be able to spend less time and to be able, less time with the business, more time with family and grandkids and so forth. And, you know, flying back to Haiti once a month and you know, making sure the things that we're building and doing there are doing well as well. So I think that's kind of where I'm looking at going and by 2020.
Well, my guest, Bill, has been great. I really appreciate you joining us today on the show. And Bill, where can people learn more about everything that you're working on?
Well, we have our website, which is Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, Old Dogs, R-E-I, that stands for Real Estate Investing, Old Dogs, R-E-I, network.com. And there, you know, we have articles, we have podcasts, we have all kinds of, you know, interesting resources that people can access free. Everything's free on the site. So there's no charge. I have anything I'm selling. It's just strictly for resources for people that are in retirement, that are looking for stuff that they can use to be able to make that decision or to, you know, to grow their real estate portfolio.
That's wonderful. Well, my guest has been Bill Mancero, and it's been a real treat having you here on the show, Bill. And by the way, I'm going to be a guest on your show, I believe, like in a week or so. I'm super excited about that.
And we are too. I want to hear all about this freedom number thing. And we're going to have a blast. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, this has been a missing piece in our collection here of great podcast interviews to talk about what it's like, you know, to look at the over 50 crowd and how to help them achieve financial freedom. I talk to many, many of them on the phone on a regular basis, and they'll say, hey, I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm getting ready to get started. And I'm so impressed by them taking action. And we help them get up, you know, get their first property and get started with real estate investing. So this is great to have you here on the show, Bill. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Clayton. And, you know, I've listened to your podcast. I draw a lot of great, and I've also referred it to people that listen to our show. I think you've got great information that people can use. And, you know, and just a final note, you know, that the folks listening that are older, I mean, this is actually really exciting. I love learning new things. I'm meeting new people all the time. It's a blast. And, you know, a lot of times people don't know what to do in their retirement, you know, is it they collect seashells or what have you. And you know, and I'm just having a kick. I mean, it's fun too on top of it. So, just a final word there that folks, you know, it's, don't be, you know, so fearful that you're missing out on something that you really could enjoy a great deal as well.
Well, great resource. So everyone who's listening right now, go over and check out Bill's podcast. My guest has been Bill Mancero, the host of the Top Dog, Old Dogs, REI Network, a website, a blog, and newsletter. So check out the weekly podcast as well to help you out. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing. We will be back on Monday with another episode of the Investing in Real Estate podcast. We've got some great guests lined up. We're going to be deep diving some new strategies for the new year as we approach the holiday season here. And we're going to be helping you figure that stuff out, getting your taxes in order and all of those goody good things. So we'll see you back here next time on Monday with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Until then, go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor. And listen to Bill. It's never too late to get started.